Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hey folks, it's me, Steven, and as I announced in many of the previous episodes, well, I'm currently on vacation, and I'm not going to be back until July. But don't go anywhere, because you're still going to get an episode of this podcast. It just won't be hosted by me. Instead, it's going to be hosted by a truly amazing individual, or a group of truly amazing individuals. Just, you know, don't go falling in love with them and leave me, okay? Anyway, see y'all in July.
Boys and girls, your attention, please. Presenting a new exciting radio program featuring the thrilling adventures of an amazing and incredible personality.
Hey, testing. Okay, so much like Richard Linklater did with Boyhood, I have a feeling what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend the next 25 to 30 to 35 years collating material that I can then use to do dream movie castings before they're actually out. I'm going to start this in the off chance. An old gypsy that I think I accidentally made thinner, she gave me these cast lists for all these movies out to 2031. And so I am going to just cherry pick some of the recordings I've made, and we'll see how right I was, and I don't know, maybe have a little fun along the way. Anyway, consider that a cold open. My name is The Voice, and I want to welcome you to
Just Another Fanboy.
With that said, let's go ahead and start having some fun. Oh, by the way, if you want to call in, I need to check with Steven, but I will put the call-in number in the comments. Thank you, and back to the show. Okay, I just want to point out, I'm doing this intro from a kayak on a lake in North Texas. It's actually pretty cool. I would highly recommend this way to end a day. It kind of puts me in a good mood to do some podcasting. You know what I mean? It just makes me feel good on the inside. That's what The Voice is all about, feeling good on the inside. I know it's better to look good than to feel good, but right now I am going to worry about function over form, and dang the torpedoes, full speed ahead. Without any more delays, let's do a show. Mental note, insert open here. Good luck finding music that isn't owned by somebody. I don't think I have enough time to make my own. Yeah, take care of that before you send it to Steven. End note. And one more, sorry about the interruption, and one more time, let's start the show.
Just Another Fanboy.
Oh, excuse me, what I meant to say was welcome to the show. I am the voice, and it is great to have you with us. To the millions of listeners across this planetoid of ours, hurtling off into the void, almost randomly, only with some Euclidean sense of direction. I just want to say welcome to the show. So again, I'm going to start rolling some of these found clips. You know, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I will just have to do these out loud. I might have to just refer to my notes. It depends. I'm trying to figure out a way to get a reel-to-reel into the system, and I don't have a reel-to-reel to USB-C adapter. So give me a minute. Hey, go get some snacks or something. Yeah, I think that's probably the best idea. Everybody take 5, take 10, whatever you need, take 10. I don't know, man, maybe make some queso or something. But not the stuff with that fake cheese. Was it a Velveeta? Yeah, No, Velveeta and Rotel. No, off the books, you're not authorized to do that. What I am looking for is for actual God's honest cheese, man. Cheese. Preferably not the stuff with Listeria in it that commonly found in Middle America this month. Dang it, I'm sorry, Steven. I told you I wouldn't date the show. I can't talk politics either. I'm so angry! Again, everybody, go make some queso, or take your dog on a short walk, or, I don't know, man, put one of your cats out of their misery with a pillow, or something, whatever you're into, just come back in, I don't know, 5-10 minutes, whatever, I don't know, whatever. Look, just lay the phone down, turn the volume up a little bit, and when you hear me talking again here in a few minutes, just you can come on back. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
The second half of tonight's reading will resume after the intermission in 20 minutes.
So that scary old gypsy lady told me I had to start working on this because I didn't want to sneak up on me. But she also told me I'd be really good at dream casting upcoming movies. So we're going to go ahead and start with this. Man, I hear there's this new movie coming out called Star Wars. I hope it's not as scary as Jaws. My parents should not have taken me to that. I mean, geez, I'm an 8-year-old kid. So let's see, Star Wars. Who do I want to see in Star Wars? Oh, I want to see some talented, veteran, Shakespearean, British actors. Yeah. Sir Alec Guinness would make a great Obi-Wan Kenobi, I think. Peter Cushing, he's kind of menacing. I think he'd make a great Grand Moff Tarkin. I don't think there's any other choices for Darth Vader than David Prowse. I mean, duh, that's just obvious, and his voice is perfect. Let's get an unknown. Maybe if she was related to Tony Curtis somehow. How about what's her name? Fisher, Carrie Fisher. That's it. I would cast Carrie Fisher as Princess Leia. And then, so that leaves us the two leads, I guess. Han Solo and Luke Skywalker. It's going to be fun to see who actually gets cast as these two characters. But
I'd say for Luke Skywalker, we probably want to go with another relative unknown. I'm going to go with Dirk Benedict. And for Han Solo, I think Richard Hatch is probably the best choice I can think of. Okay, I got to go now. My parents made hot dogs and green peas for dinner.
Hey, everybody. I need to go ahead and apologize up front. This is totally on me. I promised you guys found footage, found audio of me doing dream screenings, dream castings for upcoming movies, and I had about 57 of them, but it turns out that I had them all on reel-to-reel tape, and it turns out that I left those in the garage for about the last, let's see, what time is it, 8 o'clock, about the last 27 years they've been in the garage. And it turns out that I spoke too soon. Mice had nested in these tapes. And I've only got one left. And it's just because it's a relatively recent movie. And I was able to use a DAT tape for that. And I had that stored in a cool, dry place. Everything is great. And so I'm just going to go ahead and launch, and I'm going to play the tape of this last one. So please enjoy, and then we will wrap up the show, and I will free the rest of your nights up to go have fun, go meet some people, you know. Go out and live a little bit. I think the idea that people have been busting to get outside the house and stuff for the last 2 or 3 years is absolutely true. And I think not only is it long past time for it, but I think it's incredibly important to get out there and have meaningful human contact. I mean, we're not talking about, not FaceTiming, not texting, actually get out there and, smell the other people's cologne and kind of get jostled around in a crowd and just, feel the electricity of crowds of people and just imagine all the creativity and the love and everything that goes with being around people who you haven't met, and so they're not friends yet. So get out there and go touch another person's heart, go touch another person's soul, go make someone's day a little bit better, and one at a time. We're gonna heal the world. I'll go ahead and roll the tape now of the dream casting of Dune.
So everybody knows that Dune is one of my favorite books of all time. Some people know that, I guess, close friends, so I've been given the chance by the old crone, the witch lady, the gypsy, and I'm sorry, I don't know what other term to use besides gypsy. I truly do not mean to offend. So for those of you Romanis, you have my love, and starting tonight, I'll never use that term again. And again, I love you. All right, so casting. Oh man, this is gonna be tough. There's a lot of major characters that need to be figured out. Where do you start? Let's go ahead and start with the villain. A good story is only as good as its villain. Am I right? So the villain in this movie, as we well know, is the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. And some pronounce it Harkonnen. I think that either is correct. So don't let pedants get in there and get all up in your grill and tell you that it has to be pronounced Harkonnen or Harkonnen. It's a very tomato-tomato, which is an ironic metaphor considering this movie takes place on a planet where there is no rainfall, and you're not going to find any tomato plants of any variety, really. So, with that, for villain, I'm going to pick a guy I've always loved. I hope this comes true. I would love to see Stellan Skarsgård play the Vladimir Harkonnen's part. He's menacing, and he is someone that I think is going to really portray him in a lot more menacing and realistic way than we got in the Dune 1984 movie, where that character is clearly just over the top. I mean, even the director of the movie doesn't like that movie. So that tells you what you need to know. Let's see. Stilgar, the leader of the Fremen, I would go with either Dave Bautista or Javier Bardem. Tell you what, I would like to see Javier Bardem play Stilgar, and Dave Bautista could actually he could pair up with Stellan Skarsgård, and Dave Bautista could be Glossu Raban, the Beast Raban, who is a merciless and heartless killing machine in service of his uncle, the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen. Okay, cool. This is starting to take shape a little bit. Let's see. To pair with Javier Bardem, let's go ahead and say... I realize Gurney Halleck doesn't start... Spoiler alert, sorry. I know Gurney Halleck doesn't start the story out with Stilgar and the Fremen, but he'll get there eventually. This is the one guy that... he is so good in Outer Range. It's unbelievable. He was great in Deadpool 2. I honestly can't... He was great in Men in Black 3. Yeah, I'm talking about Josh Brolin. That's the guy I want to see play Gurney Halleck. I think that would be great. Okay, who else? I think the we got to do Paul Atreides, the lead character's parents. I'm going to go with... Yeah. I think that Oscar Isaac and Rebecca Ferguson would be the patented dream casting of this movie, man. Those two would both be so good in this. Say what you want about Oscar Isaac and Moon Knight, really feel free to say what you want about Moon Knight. I'll get into the whole Disney Plus thing in a moment or two. It's Disney proper, not just Disney Plus. But Disney Plus is not helping the scene any. Rebecca Ferguson is someone that I've dug since. How did I not know about her before? Was Mission Impossible 5, I think. Maybe 6, maybe probably both. Anyway, Rebecca Ferguson, she would bring a tremendous gravitas to that role. She would play the Lady Jessica, and that's kind of a tricky subject that I think Denis Villeneuve is probably going to handle very effectively and very well by never outright... talking about this thing. I think one of the things that Villeneuve is going to do really well with this movie, this is just a prediction, is that he is going to spend a lot of energy condensing the story and making it visual. Because as we all know in Herbert's book, so much of the story is driven by people's thoughts. Without the use of voiceover, the audience cannot be omniscient, and so we cannot know what the characters are thinking, unless they tell us. On a printed page, it's obviously very easy. On a movie screen, it can come over like a Led Zeppelin. Harrison Ford will tell you that. And Harrison Ford might have made a good Han Solo. I may have to go back and revisit that. Of course, that was 4 years ago, I think, when I taped that, so I don't know. Anyway, whatever, I'll get back to that later. So I just, I think that you're going to find that Denis Villeneuve, the most amazing thing about Dune Part 1 is the fact that he will show you things, not tell them. And he is going to be effective enough at the craft of showing you imagery that he is going to communicate the greater ideas, the lessons to be learned from the story, from each individual chapter, from each interfacing of characters. I think that you're going to see that he finds a way to use this fairly amazing economy of storytelling that is going to serve Dune incredibly well, in a way that I don't know that anybody could have predicted. Because, as you know, we all saw Villeneuve graduated from Blade Runner 2049, an incredibly atmospheric and visual movie. You know, how does he turn that to a book which is so heavy on just deep exposition, deep necessary exposition? He is going to basically cast spells as a filmmaker, and that's how he's going to communicate this film to the audience. It's going to be incredibly effective, and it's going to be an even more universal experience for the audience, because this movie is going to be so visual. It's almost like a promo. The first promos, the first trailers you see for a movie oftentimes are labeled international. And you'll notice that they have no dialogue in them whatsoever. It's only music, sound effects, and visuals. And the reason for that is because they don't want there to be any language barrier. They want all 7 billion people on a planet to be able to watch this and get hopefully the same visceral, appetizing experience out of this. And so I think that that concept, in a way, is going to propel what I think is going to be a fairly magical part one of Dune. Anyway, sorry to finish up here. I think we're down to the final two characters. You know what? We'll go ahead and throw in kind of the mad doctor for the Baron Vladimir Harkonnen, his evil scientist named Piter DeVries, and he's got some of the coolest lines. The little mantra he tells himself when he is drinking the juice of Safu, which helps him to process intellectually at a higher efficiency. I think that I would probably go with David Dalmastian. He was good at Ant-Man. He has kind of a haunted look to him. I think he might do evil scientist really well. I don't know, maybe they give him some cat eye contacts or something really cool like that. We'll see. I don't know. You know, we're just having fun with this whole exercise. So the last two characters, Paul and his fated love, Chani, who is one of the Fremen under Stilgar's care. And when Paul has to flee to the desert, I won't go into any more detail there to avoid spoiling as much as possible. He meets Chani, and he realizes that he has seen her in his precognitive fugues for quite a while, and that he basically feels like he's destined to be with her. I can't think of anybody who embodies that spirit more than the very, very low-key Mary Jane Watson, played by Zendaya. So I'm going to go ahead and hope that Zendaya, I don't know why I wanted to call her Zendaya. I'm so silly. Zendaya, we're going to cast you as Chani. And that leaves the final character, Paul Atreides. And it's interesting because a lot of people don't realize their knee-jerk reaction is that Dune is a story about a white savior. coming to kind of rescue and guide, you know, the indigenous peoples. And that's actually not at all what Frank Herbert was trying to say. Frank Herbert, the author, was a noted ecologist, and he was fiercely protective of the idea of sovereign identity for Native American Indians. Frank Herbert spent most of his years in Oregon and up and down the West Coast, and he always had a very strong libertarian ecologist streak. He fiercely loved the land, and in fact the idea for Dune was created while he was sent out on an assignment to do a story for somebody else. I think it was on Newsweek, but it was about like the erosion of the sand dunes in Oregon. And the visual was so striking to him that it spurred this idea of a planet that was all dune. And, you know, the whole thing spun out of that. And, you know, next thing you know, fast forward, you know, to 1986, and he has written six Dune books, which almost literally get better as they go along. If I could just go ahead and drive off into the bar ditch for just a moment, I'll bring us right back. I think I may have shocked my podcast mates Brad and Frank when I ranked my personal preference of the original six Dune books. I think anything written after that by Kevin J. Anderson and Frank's son Brian can be considered honorable mention, and possibly not in canon, but yeah, probably are. Actually, those two guys have written a couple of books that I thought were pretty interesting. I thought the Butlerian Jihad series, the second trilogy written after the House books. I thought the House books kind of read like a phone book. But I'm not a huge fan of, this is a prequel, this is 30 years before the event, so, you know, everybody you knew in the first movie is a kid in this one. They're all teenagers now, so, you know, we can get away with casting, you know, the Saved by the Bell kids, and we're going to make a money, you know, a mint, and it's just, I've never been a fan of that. So, with that said, we'll go ahead and move into the present here, and... Oh, geez. I don't even know how to finish this thought. So you know what? I'm not going to. Let's just go ahead and go jump back to Paul Atreides' casting. And there's a lot of great actors out there. You know, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon are really, really good. I think somebody like Timothy Chalamet might do a great job. But my dream casting for Paul Atreides, I think I'm trying to talk myself out of it. I can't. That means I'm on to something here. So my dream casting for Paul Atreides, and y'all can just follow me and go, duh, when I say this. But, yeah, my dream casting, Paul Atreides, Muad'Dib, Pete Davidson. Enjoy the movie, everybody. Okay, well, that was a heck of a countdown there. That was a countdown of some of my favorite movie casting, star casting, fantasy movie role playing casting prognostications of the highest mystical and non-mystical orders. Sorry, I'm not sure I was finished that title. I don't have my notes with me. My apologies. I really honestly don't know how I'm going to make it up to each. Okay, let's just break it down for a second here. I kind of feel like I owe each one of you all an apology. And, look. I don't know. I don't know how else to do this. Give me a minute here. Let's just get this out of the way. I'm sorry, 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 I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Wow. Yeah, that took a while. I wasn't expecting that. It's kind of like, you know, what it ended up feeling like was when Andy Kaufman, he does the appearance at the college student union, and he ends up reading, oh gosh, I wish I could remember what the name of the book was. But he reads like Pride and Prejudice or Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, or I don't know, some famous piece of literature, whatever. It's not the point here. The point is that he starts reading this book as people are trickling, as he tells people that's the end of the show, and while you leave, I'm going to go ahead and read this. I think that's how he went. That's how George Carlin did it with the expanded Seven Words You Can't Say on Television in 1985. I know because I was there. I hope I'm not mixing this up with Andy Kaufman. If so, I would be mortified. Anyway, no, that's not... Hey, whoa, stop. That is not to say that I'm asking you all to leave. That's not the case here at all. I'm just saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to... Okay, let's see. 3, 2, 1... Okay, that's halftime. So, everybody, give me 5 or 10 minutes. I just need to unwind for a minute. I need to go ahead and I need to check my notes, kind of, you know, get myself all combobulated again. And I'm going to go see if I can manage to shovel myself. And hopefully I'm going to come back much more gruntled in 5-ish minutes. So, okay. Go ahead and set the phone down again, and just like last time, I'll start talking at some point, and you can just, like, come on back and get with me. I'm saving the best for last, so I just want to say I love every one of you, and I'm sure there was something important. Oh, what was it? Here I go getting angry again. Oh, I've got to stop that. Gosh. It's not anger, it's just frustration, honestly. I really expect to just crush this. And really, up until, to be honest with you, the listener, up until about a minute and 11 seconds ago, I think I was. But anyway, you guys just go ahead and have a moment or two to yourselves. Smoke them if you got them, man. And come on right back. Okay, and then we'll get on with the best part of the show. All right, welcome back. Is this the part I have to go back and actually cut professionally? Let's see. Part of it is a cost-benefit analysis. Would it be worth it? Are the juices flowing out here? Because again, up until about a minute 11 before the last intermission, I was crushing it. Do I get into it now? Well, I see, I need my tab, I need my notes. I will get into this. And then I may just make some kind of smash cut edit, man, at the house. Can I get serious with you guys? Just a minute. Okay. All right, let's bring the music down, okay? Let's dim the lights. Okay, thanks. Yeah. So I don't know about you guys, but... am I starting to get worried about Disney? Is it a problem with them or a problem with me? And I ask this in all sincerity. This is actually not shtick. You haven't heard shtick yet. This is certainly not any of that. This is not the beginning of the shtickful portion of...
Just another fanboy.
Mental note, lay in some kind of audio... audio sounder of Steven's show each time I forget to mention the name of the podcast. Okay, good, thank you. And resume podcasting. What was I saying? Once again, this must not have been very important or I wouldn't have forgot it. Oh, that's right, I was talking about... being worried about Marvel. So, yeah, back to being serious and dropping the shtick for one hot minute. I said at one point And I'm going to go ahead and stand behind this, that I don't think the MCU has had a special movie since Endgame. And I think I was a bigger defender of WandaVision than many people. My half-hour wasted counterparts, Brad, Frank, what up? They vehemently disagreed with my conclusions to WandaVision. I found the first three episodes of WandaVision to be intoxicating. And the second three episodes I thought were really, really interesting. And I thought the third three episodes were, frankly, a formulaic letdown. Did not enjoy the experience. I think that they squashed a bunch of the mystery. I wasn't satisfied by a lot of their conclusions that it was, you know, it was Agnes all along. It was a very cute little slogan. It went viral fittingly. I think that was a very, very clever little thing to do, a little twist to the proceedings there. But that's the problem. It was a quip. I don't think it served the greater story well to have her be the sole villain of the piece. I think, you know, that's almost paying off a red herring. Anyway, so WandaVision, I thought, was a noble... It was noble, and it was better than adequate. Loki is the one thing I would say... We're going in order here, obviously. Loki, I think, is the one thing that I would say has been truly special since Endgame. If I had to say, I think Marvel has done nothing special since Endgame except for blank, it is obviously Loki. I think Hawkeye was a really cool show. I thought it was fun in a way that I was hoping for. Marvel, they used to be known for fun movies, man. They used to be kind of witty and catty and just kind of wink-wink. The quips, I think, were welcome at a time when that was still a novelty. Maybe some people might tell you that it's reached a saturation point and that everything doesn't have to be written like a comic book. And I don't know. I think that they're comic book movies. So as long as they're done well, I kind of don't care what style you want to do them in. Anyway, so yeah, that was that. I could keep going, but the point is made. I'm not going to examine the Phase 4 movies. I just think they've all been odd and flawed, and I think had issues in third acts in every single movie. And Doctor Strange, man, I would like to say don't get me started on him, but he is honestly, those who know me know that he is probably he's easily in my top five of comic book properties, I guess, if you want. Super quick, Legion of Superheroes, number one by a mile, Fantastic Four, Doctor Strange, I would probably say Justice League and Avengers round out those if we're keeping it in the family. My favorite individual characters of all time, without a doubt, Dick Grayson Robin, OG Robin, and the great Supergirl. My version is the Mike Grell drawn version of Supergirl seen in the early 70s. Specifically, you need an example, go check out Superboy starring the Legion of Superheroes issue 204. The mystery, oh gosh, who is Anti-Lad? You know, who is this? It's the Legionnaire. Nobody remembered. Great issue. Anyway, that's my Supergirl. And I defy you to show me better. Kind of like Kate Beckinsale in any movie. I dare you to show me better. Or, I don't know. You know what? For the other side, I don't know, man. Let's go with that suave son of a gun. I don't know. You can have Alexander Skarsgård. Okay, how about that? Cool. We're all agreed. Let's go ahead and move on. So, my point is that, in my opinion, I haven't found any of these properties to be truly special and kind of inspiring. And, you know, I need to think about this. And holy cats, unfortunately, everything is feeling fairly homogenized up to the re-release of, or the release of the second installment in the Doctor Strange movie series. And man, I
like the first Doctor Strange, like when into Guardians of the Galaxy, I was literally nervous that this property, which I loved, it'll be like that when I go to see the Fantastic Four movie, or God willing, a Legion of Superheroes movie someday. I will be nervous AF because I need that movie to fill a slot in my soul that's waiting for something like that. So bring that home. So yeah, I'll be nervous. So I do still care enough to be invested. I guess that's the right conclusion to draw here, because I'm worried that I'm losing faith in Feige, Marvel, etc., to deliver me something I actually care to spend time at. And I guess I answer my own question. I still do care. Now, on the other side, I am a completist. I'm the one who has to watch every episode of Enterprise. I'm the one who has to watch every episode of Discovery, knowing that I'm likely to be bitterly disappointed by the end of it. I do feel a tremendous loyalty to and a curiosity of the properties that I have previously proclaimed my love for. And I think, you know, anything MCU, anything Trekkie has got an automatic lifetime pass. Star Wars 2, and the origination of my rant here a few minutes ago, I'd rather not call it a rant. Let's call it a one-way discussion, like the kind you have with, you know, with your teenagers, that kind of discussion. No, we're not asking for... I'm not asking for feedback here. I'm telling you the way the world works. Do we even need to start with the storytelling issues in Star Wars? And I will say that The Mandalorian Season 1 and The Mandalorian Season 2 absolutely reignited a fire in my soul. You know, just of satisfaction and a feeling of... just being absolutely caressed by the storytelling gods. They were perfect, but so good. Kind of like Strange New Worlds, boys and girls. Don't sleep on that son of a gun. Mandalorian and Strange New Worlds, two surprisingly good properties. We already knew that about The Mandalorian. We hope that about Strange New Worlds. Turns out it's right about Strange New Worlds. Give it a little bit of slack for being a minor slow burn. Give it five episodes. Give it through episode 5 at least before you rule on Strange New Worlds. I think you'll enjoy it. Anyway, I appreciate that. That aside was sponsored by
your mom.
Next time I do this for you, I'm free, by the way. I'm free. Like, you need me to do this again in like 2 weeks or whatever? I need to take a week off. This is not easy. A lot goes into making a podcast, an individual episode of a podcast, this special and this well thought out and this tightly scripted. So all that to say that I need, another blockbuster movie. I was telling this to my buddy, to Buddy Mike, and Buddy Mike was like, Doctor Strange and Spider-Man weren't special. And I'm like, man, okay, now this goes into a whole thing of do we consider the Sony Spider-Man's canon? And I think for the purpose of this discussion, I'll go ahead and I'll concede the point that the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies are definitely MCU. MCU versus MCU canon, whereas the first set with Andrew and young Toby are not. We can draw that line there and move on with our lives. So yeah, I think they are, but I think much like, ironically enough, Sam Raimi did with the first set, Webb. Mark Webb, the director of the Amazing movies with Andrew Garfield, man, he absolutely stuffed it. He ruined the second one with overstuffing, just like Raimi. You know what? Okay, let me take that back. Webb did not ruin Amazing Spider-Man 2 with having crap stuffed into it. I truly believe that the studio told him to stuff all this extra crap into it, and it was just too overwrought, and you just can't make it work. Or there are some, you know, great single point of failure as far as storytelling goes. Anyway, I think we can all agree it was unsatisfying. Just like the third Spider-Man movie that Raimi did was overstuffed and unsatisfying. The third Spider-Man movie, okay, it's actually great. I was pulling your leg, everybody. I wasn't going to say that movie wasn't great. That movie is freaking great. But it opens up a problem, though. Between that and Doctor Strange, you're now opening up a multiverse. And so, up until this point, it's taken me a while to bring this tugboat back to shore, I guess. But up until now, basically, every movie has been in one universe, in one canon. And I think that, you know, multiverse movies, they can open up a whole new world of possibilities, but the problem is, very obviously, that all of a sudden storylines come cheaply because, like a Rick and Morty episode, anything can happen at any time because it can come from anywhere in a multiverse where literally anything is going to happen. It's math. Just, you know, look it up. It's friggin' math. Anyway, hey, looks like I am about to get run over by a boat, so I'm going to put the phone down now. And this is either good night and love you guys, you know, or I'm going to come back with an actual wrap it up. I think maybe I have one more point to get to before we say goodbye. So don't go anywhere. Stick around. We'll be back right after this.
All right, everybody, I'm not going to lie. That was a close call out there. Turns out that boat, Somali pirates, which is weird on Lake Levan. You'd expect probably well-to-do suburbanites or something, but pirate. Anyway, as I kick off the goodbye portion of this lovely little podcast, I want to make sure that Steven understands how grateful I am to him to let me sit in on this. Hope you all enjoyed Frank's professional broadcast, and wonder if anybody caught the fact that I was absolutely channeling my inner Andy Kaufman today. Man, that's it's not easy to do. For the listener, not for me, it was easy for me. But I would like to leave you with a couple of thoughts as I wind this down. We've talked about movies, we've talked about Dune, I did some pretty amazing precognitive, what do we call it, let's call it dream casting, yeah, let's go with that. Man, that was a great segment. I'm going to have to listen back to that. Yeah, that might, I'm going to have to monetize that, I think. Of course, that's only if I can recover that reel-to-reel that was savaged by rodents. Wish me luck. If people can recover stuff on damaged hard drives, I can probably do that to a reel-to-reel. I mean, right, how hard can it be, honestly? For me, two of the things I love most in life, comic books and music. And the comic book thing is actually fairly easy. I think it's interesting that comic books right now are in a very weird state. You know, we've been predicting the demise of comic books for a generation now. And honestly, the direct-to-market concept has not been kind to the mom-and-pop and kid readers. I think that comics would be so much better off if you could find them at a spinner rack again. But you can't put Baxter paper on a spinner rack. You know, you've got to have more respect for, you know, that great paper. Hey, my thought is put it back on newsprint again, kids. We can read it on beautiful, white, glorious, glamorous, glossy paper in the trades. make those things cheaper, get them into the hands of the next generation that's actually going to support the industry, as opposed to watching it die a slow death. It's interesting to, for the last few years, I've approached the comic industry through the eyes of someone who has got both Marvel Unlimited and DC Universe Infinite, and that is now how I work through my comic addiction. So I'm a few months behind just because of the way the app works. I totally get it. You know, they would still like you to go to the comic book store and buy that issue that you just cannot wait to read. And I have actually done that. I've gone and I've purchased a Doctor Strange comic here and there. I've tried to keep up with the Legion Superheroes run, even though Bendis's most recent version of it ended months ago now, maybe close to a year, considering the time jump between in person and what you get on the app. I always want a reason to go to a comic book store. I just have fewer and fewer of them these days, thanks to those glorious apps. And as I approach my mid-50s, I find that my eyes really appreciate something that's backlit and something that I can turn the brightness up on if I need to. The only downside of the tab is that you can't read outside. I can live with that. I'm probably not taking my comics outside because after all, they're printed on high-quality Baxter paper. I know it's not Baxter, but you know what I mean. It's that nice, you know. It's really honestly, it's not better than the medium deserves, but I think it induces a price point into comics just built in that is always going to continue to make it difficult for the six-year-old kid like I was to, you know, get into it and to really fall in love. And of course, you know, comics were more innocent back in those days. So it was never an issue. Now, you know, a good parent probably does need to at least look over their kid's shoulder at the comic book store and make sure, you know, what they're getting is something that's not going to scar them for life or make them grow up way too fast. Anyway, one thing I think it's odd is that, DC especially seems like they have relatively few titles these days, if you look week to week. Some of the most interesting titles that DC has come out with, though, have turned out to be the comic equivalent of a miniseries. They're not intended to be ongoing necessarily. I've got to say that one of my favorite titles of the last number of years now is something written by N.K. Jemison. Sorry, I'm doing this off the top of my head. The Far Sector arc that introduces Joe or Sojourner Muline as a brand new Green Lantern character, I think is fantastic. It's really cool. It's a mystery. I really dig the introduction of Joe Muline's character. I think what they've done with her, and they have made her a different Green Lantern. I will not go any further into it, so you can find out yourself. You can go on your own journey. But if you've got, you know, DC Universe Infinite, man, they need to trim that name down. Give Far Sector a shot, absolutely. I also think that one last note of Far Sector, which it just honestly, I've gone back and I've reread it twice. So I read the entire series three times total. And it's only been out for like a year. It's just for some reason that just hits all the right notes with me. I love the sci-fi high concept. I will say that the setting of the book happens, Far Sector is aptly named as it happens basically on the other side of the universe, which is such a cool concept for me. I love to imagine the idea of being, you know, in a galaxy, you know, 1500 galaxies over and to the left a little bit, just being, you know, way, way the heck out there. So it's really cool. Far Sector is, I think, my favorite single title of the last number of years, other than anything that Jonathan Hickman touches. And I know that's a Marvel thing. I'll get to that in just a moment. Another title which I is growing on me. I actually had to force myself to get through the first couple of issues, and it's not over yet. I mean, it probably is if you go and pick these up in the LCSs, but I am working my way through Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, which I think is written by Tom King, if I remember right, and I've not read Tom King's fairly controversial, as far as I know, run on Batman, so I don't know a whole heck of a lot about Tom King, but I really enjoy what he has done with the character of Supergirl, and I really dig Supergirl's plucky little sidekick. And it's also a story that is not intended to be ongoing, I don't believe. And like Far Sector, it's also a title that, Far Sector, I think, takes place over a few days or a few weeks. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, there are months in between issues as far as the development of the characters and the timeline of the story and all that stuff. It's just a really cool idea. And it's kind of, it's the kind of adventure you would almost expect, to be part of a classic literature, which is probably, you know, Tom's idea. It was probably his thoughts, in trying to spin something that's, feels kind of timeless. Anyway, the third thing, is DC, they have, the way DC is doing their books right now is really interesting to me too, because you've got a lot of these titles, especially Justice League. I'll pick out in particular, you know, again, as we talked about earlier, Justice League is a top five title to me. It's the kind of thing I'm going to be a completist. I'm going to read it no matter what. So I'm in, but they are having these issues, and maybe this has to do with trying to balance out the current price points. But they'll have a full-length Justice League story, and then they'll back it up with a 10-12 issue Justice League Dark Adventure. And both of these stories are continuing through the titles. I find that a pretty cool way to go, because I don't honestly know what the price tag on the cover of a recent Justice League comic is, but you are getting two comic books in one wrapper. And cool stuff. Interesting ideas coming out of the world of comics these days. I do feel really bad for some of those artists who are having to deal with the whole Warner Brothers thing, and you know, the poor DC guys getting moved out of their offices, and just you know, basically moving into a WeWork a facility. Just so weird. I hope that the creators of these comics are well taken care of financially, and that they're able to find an honest, real peace with the way the industry is right now. I guess it's a good thing that comics, especially in the age of the internet, is truly something you can do from home. A lot of artists have been doing that for a generation or two now, and they made it work through the mail. So, you know, obviously you can do that with Dropboxes and OneDrives and stuff like that. Seems to work out fairly well for everybody as far as the quality of the comics that are being put out, even if I wish there were more physical titles. One DC title, last thing I'll mention, for DC. Okay. Two things I'm going to mention. I can't say enough good things about the Green Lantern. The current ongoing is really interesting, and I'm invested. They've introduced yet another kid Green Lantern character, and much like Far Sector, this is not a normal Green Lantern with a normal power ring. And I find it pretty fascinating that these evolutions in the whole Green Lantern method is changing rapidly. So, you know, good for DC for not being stagnant. I've never been one of those. When I was a kid, you know, comics came out with It wasn't just capes and tights. You know, comics were westerns, comics were war comics, comics were mystery and horror, and you know, you had so many different genres of comic books, and that has, for the most part, especially if you're mainly concentrating on the big two, which is what I do, then you just, you know, pretty much everything is, you know, capes and tights and punching bad guys out and outsmarting Lex Luthor and Dr. Doom and stuff like that. But DC has started reintroducing so-called horror titles, or at least mystery titles. And I am absolutely fascinated. Again, I'm probably a few months behind real time. I've heard that the first season, if you want to call it that, paused, and there was a few month gap before they pick up with the so-called season two. But a title right now that I can't wait for Mondays, when the titles refresh weekly on the app, is The Nice House on the Lake. I'm sorry, again, I'm doing this off the top of my head, and I wish I could remember the creators of it. It's interesting art, fairly dirty, sketchy artwork, as a lot of titles are kind of going to these days. It's fairly raw artwork, which is interesting. You know, I come from a world where I think that, you know, as a kid, you know, really nothing was better than John Byrne and Terry Austin, you know, clean lines and you know, just very beautiful artwork to look at. And artwork in a lot of books these days, you would not say it's beautiful to look at. It's interesting. It's probably indicative of the current age we live in, whatever that means. But it's just, it's art that works with the story. There's really only a few artists these days that do work that I have a hard time dealing with. One of them, I'm sorry, is Riley Rossmo. I have a hard time getting into his art. I'm sorry, I'm assuming Riley is a guy. But I don't mean to dump on him. It's just a style of art which doesn't quite jibe with me. But so many do, and I don't mean to put him down. Anyway, so yeah, Nice House on the Lake is a post-apocalyptic mystery, if you will. I find it incredibly dense thematically, and it's really well done. And it surprises me that I kind of latched onto this, because again, I've never, literally never been into the non-capes and tights superhero stuff. So it's kind of cool for me to enjoy going out and finding something new. It makes me, honestly, it does make me want to go to the LCS and start picking up non-big two titles, because I know that content like that is out there. And I know that it's top shelf stuff. I just need to go connect with it. Anyway, what I was going to say about Green Lantern was one of my favorite titles in the last couple, 3 years. I've always been, you know, as a Frank Herbert fan, I've always been kind of a Grant Morrison junkie, a Jonathan Hickman junkie. I love the huge, big concept, you know, turn what you expect on its head and then put it in a blender. What he did, he and Liam Sharp, good gravy, Liam Sharp is amazing. I think right now he is either working on or just finished Batman Reptilian. And I don't know how someone does art like that and is able to turn a book out monthly. It just seems like, you know, what he's doing, is this art, the care that he puts into it, the detail, it should take weeks or months to put together, you know, 20 pages of this stuff. I'm stunned watching his art. And of course, Grant Morrison's just absolute built-in bizarrity. I know I just made that word up. It's okay. You can use it. Grant Morrison, Liam Sharp, man, they killed it. on the Green Lantern title, which we got two seasons of, two 12-issue runs. Great stuff. I wish that Grant would put out more mainstream comic stuff because you do it, Grant. I'm there, buddy. As far as Marvel goes, I am not as in love with the Fantastic Four as I used to be. I will always be madly in love with them as characters, and I am waiting for Dan Slott to either grab me by the scruff or... although, now he did have a really cool arc as they went, the Fantastic Four went to a planet and a galaxy far, far away, and Johnny Storm ended up becoming soulmates with someone from a society that the Fantastic Four had gotten with. You know, okay, no spoilers, but the Fantastic Four has had a couple of good little mini arcs within this first 40 some odd issues that are out right now. I don't love it as much as I loved Hickman's run or Mark Miller's. That was for you, Brad and Frank. Mark Miller. But mainly what I have loved in Marvel for the last number of years now are the X-Men titles. I think what Jonathan Hickman did to them it was just amazing. The whole the concept, kind of in a Grant Morrison vein of just upending everything you ever thought you could possibly know about the way this particular universe revolves. For Hickman to introduce the concept of Krakoa and the concept of regeneration, and the fact that it's not just regeneration, there are clearly going to be repercussions down the line based on the concept that the mutants are not immortal, but they can be resurrected actually fairly easily. So you've gotten to a point where mutants know that death is not the end for them, that they will come back. Much like, let me bring this tugboat back to Dune here, almost exactly in the way that Golas were revived in the later Dune books, Duncan Idaho predominant among them, where you will grow a new body and then you take the original memories and you implant them into this new shell, and you are essentially resurrected. Really interesting concept, especially combining that with the fact that this is not supposed to be a good thing long term because of what it can do to a society that knows that it can't die. The way that a society could stagnate, the way that it could... that it could twist and mutate, no pun intended. The great tragedy is that even though there are a number of really top shelf creators, Jerry Dugan, Teeny Howard, other names I'm missing, that are working with Hickman and have taken up the mantle since Hickman left to go to Substack, I just think the X-Men run and all the X-Men titles are absolute. They're the first things I go to when Marvel comes out, and I try to savor every single episode, every single adventure of the X-Men family of books these days. So I think that's what I'm really digging in the comic book world these days. Finally. Honestly, finally, I wanted to do some music. I wanted to do a freaking music episode. However, Steven informed me at the last moment that he does not, in fact, have an ASCAP or a BMI license. So it would be disastrous for the YouTube algorithms and you know,
piracy concerns and, you know, stuff like that, for me to actually play any kind of real music. In fact, that is why I have not been able to deliver unto you, the kind, good listener, an audio tweet, because I can't roll out the Elastica, the great song Connection by Elastica. You know, so you know what I'm talking about. It's, you know, it says, you know, I go, hey, it's time for Bill's audio tweet. And then the music starts. And it's like, dun, 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 dun. And then, yeah, it goes a little further, and then, yeah, boom, Bill's audio Twitter, and then the music fades out, and then I, my voice comes up, and I say something quippy like, half hour wasted, more like full hour wasted, ha ha. And then the music kicks in, boom, doo 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 doo. Kind of fades out, and kind of I look at Brad and Frank, and you know, they kind of look at me with these. It's always hard to tell whether it's disapproval or just surprise. In any case, sorry about the no audio tweet. I didn't want to get the internet gatekeepers to crash down on
Just Another Fanboy.
So, what I will do is I'm going to just kind of, I'm going to offer you guys up. I'll send this to Steve as well. Hopefully, link can get through. Hopefully it's easy for people to pick it up. But if you guys have got Spotify, I have cribbed together a playlist of songs. The idea is that with very few exceptions, almost nobody listening to the show right now has ever heard of any of these bands. That's the whole idea. The concept that you guys might be able to pick up some new music that you've never heard before. I'm into some odd stuff these days. I've always kind of been a fan of Lush. I'm not into pop. Like, you're not going to catch me listening to, you know, Olivia Rodrigo or Billie Eilish or, you know, the Backstreet Boys or anything like that. But you will find me listening to groups like Brother Tiger and Tora Wee Mwa and Unknown Mortal Orchestra and Pond and Lily Konigsberg, Monster Rally, Mid, Robert Glasper, Jay Orbison, Leah Sen, Young Bay, Channel Trace, a particular favorite of mine, Jitwam, the great Donny Benet, Cartoons, Ray Khalil, Rome Fortune, people like that. So I have cobbled together a relatively short playlist. Does it say how long it is? It says 1 hour, 6 minutes long. So you guys get a nice long jog in while listening to weird music you never heard before. So I'm going to go ahead and put this playlist entitled Or What? Or What? Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and put that, I'm going to put that out as a link included with the show, assuming that Steven is good with that. And if nothing else, all the playlists that I have in my Spotify account, I keep public. And you all are more than welcome to go peruse the friggin' 1,000 playlists I've created. And good luck if you do. But this one is entitled, Or What? Question mark. So please enjoy and feel free to add to it, enhance it. And with that said, bring the music up. It is time to say goodbye for now. And I think this has gone so well, though, that I'm pretty sure that Steven is probably going to ask me to be a permanent co-host of the show. So I'm going to need a week off after this exhausting exercise in creating a podcast. But I'll look forward to be back in, with you guys in a couple weeks. And I know I just have a feeling Steven's going to love this idea. I bet you all will, too. So, you know, keep the home fires burning. Feel free to just crush the like button and ring that bell and let Steven know that you need a lot more voice in your life. Until then, peace and love and harmony to
every single one of you, and I will look forward to next time. Hugs and kisses, everybody.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.